You're on call overnight on the general medicine unit. Your patient's labs are back and her sodium is 128 mL equivalents per liter. You look at your sign out and see that Ms. Veronica Paul is an 84-year-old resident of an assisted living home where a stomach bug has been going around. She's had 2 days of diarrhea and seemed confused on admission. She also became lightheaded when she was asked to stand up. You were to follow up on her sodium level. As you think about what's causing Ms. Paul's sodium level to be low, you also think about what you would like to do next. Consider your answer as we begin this episode on hyponatremia. Welcome to AudioBricks. I'm Adam Weinstein, bringing hyponatremia from our bricks to your ears. Let's get started. After completing this episode, you will be able to 1. Describe the pathophysiology and causes of hypovolemic, hypervolemic, and euvolemic hyponatremia. 2. Explain the mechanism by which hyperglycemia, hyperproteinemia, and hyperlipidemia may cause hyponatremia. 3. Describe the use of urine testing to differentiate between the types of hyponatremia. And 4. Describe the management of the different types of hyponatremia, including acute versus chronic, symptomatic hyponatremia, and when to moderate the rate and degree of sodium correction. Part 1. What is hyponatremia? Hyponatremia is an electrolyte abnormality in which the serum sodium concentration is lower than the normal range of 135 to 145 mL equivalents per liter. Levels lower than 120 mL equivalents per liter are often symptomatic, causing neurologic symptoms such as confusion, seizures, or, particularly when the levels fall towards 100 mL equivalents per liter, even death. Hyponatremia is frequently seen in hospitalized patients and may also be seen outside the hospital setting, for example, after the intense exertion of marathon running. Unlike other hypo disorders of electrolytes, like hypokalemia or hypocalcemia, hyponatremia does not necessarily mean too little sodium in the body. In fact, because of the intricate relationship between sodium and water levels in the body, hyponatremia is best thought of as water excess relative to sodium, rather than a primary sodium problem. This excess water lowers serum osmolality, and the low osmolality causes the symptoms we just discussed. Let's dig a little deeper into these symptoms. Part 2. What does someone with hyponatremia look like? First, it's important to recognize that the symptoms of hyponatremia are not really due to the sodium itself, but rather to the low serum osmolality. Low osmolality causes neurological symptoms such as mental status changes, headaches, nausea, vomiting, muscle cramps, agitation, altered consciousness, seizures, and coma. These symptoms develop because there is excess fluid buildup in the brain, and more specifically, cerebral edema. As the low serum osmolality causes free water to leave the plasma volume and extracellular fluid volume, it shifts into the intracellular fluid volume, including that of the brain. Anatomically, the brain is in a confined location, thus cerebral edema leads to these neurological symptoms. The severity of the hyponatremia and the rapidity by which the onset of the hyponatremia occurs contributes to the severity of the symptoms. The lower the serum sodium concentration is, or the faster it decreases, the more the fluid shifting and cerebral edema will develop. Part 3. Pseudohyponatremia. Moving onward, and before we begin to discuss the different types of hyponatremia, let's first go over the concept of pseudohyponatremia. In pseudohyponatremia, the serum sodium is measured as low, but the total serum osmolality is actually normal or elevated. This may be due to hyperproteinemia, hyperlipidemia, or hyperglycemia. The first type of pseudohyponatremia is an artifact and is related to the way the laboratory measures serum sodium concentration. In this type, the patient's serum tonicity is actually fine, and the reason serum sodium concentration is measured as low relates to hyperproteinemia or hyperlipidemia. These excess proteins or lipids take up space in the blood. They are heavier molecules, and therefore, when serum sodium concentration is measured, it appears like it's measured in a larger volume. This causes the laboratory measurement to calculate a concentration of sodium that is more dilute than it truly is. Thus, it's called pseudohyponatremia rather than true hyponatremia. In summary, then, the lab value seems to think that the hyponatremia is present even though the concentration of sodium in the plasma water is actually normal, and the latter is what counts in terms of the physiology and the clinical symptoms. The second type of pseudohyponatremia may be seen with hyperglycemia. There is actually debate about the terminology of this type, and you'll find some sources refer to it as hyperosmolar hyponatremia rather than pseudohyponatremia. In this type, the high serum glucose, for example, in a patient with type 1 diabetes mellitus, is now raising the serum osmolality. The high serum osmolality, then, draws water out of cells. This effect may dilute the serum sodium concentration such that the patient technically has a low serum sodium concentration or hyponatremia. And though the serum sodium is truly low, complications and management more relate to the hyperosmolality from the hyperglycemia rather than the hypoosmolality. Okay, let's take a quick break now for a question. What serum imbalances can cause pseudohyponatremia? Hyperproteinemia and hyperlipidemia may cause pseudohyponatremia with a technically normal serum osmolality, whereas hyperglycemia causes a hyponatremia in the context of an elevated serum osmolality. Part 4. Types of hyponatremia. Hyponatremia is classified into three subtypes based on extracellular fluid volume relative to serum sodium concentration. These types include hypovolemic hyponatremia, hypervolemic hyponatremia, and euvolemic hyponatremia. Patients with each of these different subtypes of hyponatremia typically have different clinical presentations. For example, patients with hypovolemic hyponatremia often present with other signs and symptoms of volume depletion. They may have findings such as tachycardia, orthostatic hypotension, decreased capillary refill, decreased urine output, and cold and clammy skin with decreased skin turgor. Our patient, Ms. Paul, had many of these findings. Patients with hypervolemic hyponatremia typically present with signs and symptoms of extracellular volume excess, though in the context of a low effective circulating volume. This situation is seen in conditions like heart failure, cirrhosis, or nephrotic syndrome. Therefore, it often presents with findings of peripheral edema and/or ascites, and may also include symptoms such as dyspnea from pulmonary edema. And lastly, patients with euvolemic hyponatremia have a relatively normal extracellular volume status. In particular, they do not have signs or symptoms of excess or depleted extracellular fluid volume. For example, there is no edema, nor is there tachycardia or hypotension in these patients. The most common cause of euvolemic hyponatremia is from the syndrome of inappropriate ADH secretion, or SIADH, and we'll talk more about this condition more in depth shortly. First, let's do a brief review. What causes the neurologic symptoms in hyponatremia? The low serum sodium concentration results in an osmotic shift of water from the extracellular fluid volume into the intracellular fluid volume. In the brain, this causes cerebral edema, which can lead to neurological symptoms, including headache and confusion, as well as coma and death. Okay, so the urine sodium concentration is a tool that can help distinguish between the types of hyponatremia, especially when the etiology is unclear. It can be especially helpful at distinguishing euvolemic hyponatremia from the others. In euvolemic hyponatremia, the kidneys sense that there is a replete or normal extracellular fluid volume. Since the volume is plentiful and not low, there is no stimulus for the kidneys to retain or reabsorb sodium. Therefore, the kidneys will excrete sodium in the urine, even though the serum sodium concentration is low. This is often a major point of confusion, and it's helpful to remember that the kidneys retain sodium versus excrete sodium based on what they perceive as the extracellular fluid volume, and not based on the serum sodium concentration. Therefore, in euvolemic hyponatremia, the kidneys excrete sodium and the urine sodium will be increased, typically greater than 50 milliequivalents per liter. In contrast, the volume depletion of hypovolemic hyponatremia stimulates the kidneys to retain sodium, and so with hypovolemic hyponatremia, the urine sodium is typically low and less than 20 milliequivalents per liter. Lastly, in hypervolemic hyponatremia, effective circulating volume is also low, so the kidneys are perceiving a low volume, even though the extracellular fluid volume is technically high. So the kidneys again decide to retain sodium, and so the urine sodium is low here. Another helpful diagnostic test to differentiate between etiologies is urine osmolality. For example, in the case of free water intoxication or primary polydipsia, the urine osmolality will be low. On the other hand, in SIDH, ADH secretion results in a concentrated urine and free water retention and a high urine osmolality. Let's stop here for another review question. How can you tell if a patient's hyponatremia is due to volume depletion versus SIADH? The patient's history and physical are usually the most helpful. For example, our patient Ms. Paul has a history and exam suggestive of hypovolemia, but if the etiology remains unclear, the urine sodium content can distinguish between these etiologies. Patients with hypovolemic hyponatremia, volume depletion, will have a low urine sodium, often less than 10 to 20 milliequivalents per liter, whereas patients with SIDH will have a normal volume status and the kidney will not retain sodium and therefore typically have a urine sodium greater than 50 milliequivalents per liter. Part 5. Why is this happening? As we discussed earlier in this episode, hyponatremia is a result of too much water relative to the amount of sodium in the body. Conveniently, in most cases, this disproportion is a result of the work of antidiuretic hormone, or ADH. Let's first discuss this in the context of hypovolemic and hypervolemic hyponatremia. Hypovolemic hyponatremia, as the name implies, typically results from illnesses causing volume depletion, and more specifically, illnesses that lead to sodium loss as well, like gastrointestinal disturbances, vomiting and diarrhea, like our patient Ms. Paul had, excessive diuresis, or blood loss. In these conditions, the decreased extracellular volume results in a volume-induced stimulus for ADH. ADH responded by helping the kidney to reabsorb free water, and although this helps the patient's volume status, it does dilute the serum osmolality. Although the total body sodium and total body water are both low, thanks to ADH, the sodium becomes relatively lower as compared to water, so it's through this mechanism that a volume-depleted patient may get hyponatremia. As noted earlier, hypervolemic hyponatremia occurs in disease states like congestive heart failure that cause extracellular fluid volume overload in the context of also having a decreased effective circulating volume. The low effective circulating volume stimulates the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system to have the kidneys retain sodium and water. This stimulus helps the circulating volume. However, it unfortunately exacerbates the total body and extracellular fluid volume overload. And in addition, because there is a decreased circulating volume in these conditions, there is also decreased perfusion to the arterial baroreceptors in these states, and this leads to the volume-induced stimulus for ADH secretion by the hypothalamus. Therefore, patients with hypervolemic hyponatremia have both increased renal sodium reabsorption and increased water reabsorption. It's because of this latter effect from ADH that the total body water becomes higher relative to the total body sodium and the development of hyponatremia. Let's do a quick question break. How are the mechanisms of hyponatremia in heart failure and diarrhea related? Both heart failure and diarrhea, when there is decreased effective circulating volume, lead to an increase in ADH secretion. Okay, so moving to euvolemic hyponatremia again, patients with euvolemic hyponatremia have a normal total amount of sodium in the body. Thus, they don't show signs of extracellular volume excess or depletion. Instead, these patients have excess water relative to their normal sodium content, causing the concentration of sodium to become low. An important point to recognize, and a common source of confusion, is that the extracellular volume appears relatively normal, even though there's an excess of water in the body. Why is that? Well, it's because the extra water distributes in both the extracellular and intracellular volumes, and twice as much in the intracellular fluid volume. Now that we've clarified that a bit better, let's get more in depth into one of the major causes of euvolemic hyponatremia, SIADH. ADH, also called vasopressin, is a hormone that is normally made in the hypothalamus and secreted by the posterior pituitary in response to either increased serum osmolality and/or decreased effective circulating volume. Once ADH is secreted, it acts on the ADH receptor, more often called the vasopressin receptor. In the kidney, ADH binds to its receptor, specifically the vasopressin 2 receptor, on the basolateral membrane of the principal cells in the collecting duct. Once bound, through a series of steps, ADH signals the localization of the aquaporin 2 water channel to the apical membrane. Once localized there, the aquaporin channel can reabsorb free water from the tubular lumen and back into the body based on the urinary concentrating gradient formed by the loop of Henle. Certain conditions may cause the posterior pituitary gland to secrete ADH even in the absence of the two physiologic stimuli for ADH secretion. When ADH is secreted in the absence of decreased circulating volume or hyperosmolality, then this is termed the syndrome of inappropriate ADH secretion, or SIADH. SIADH is the most common cause of euvolemic hyponatremia. There are several conditions that may be associated with SIADH, and these include 1. Paraneoplastic syndromes, such as with small cell lung cancer, in which the tumors secrete ADH directly. 2. Pulmonary diseases, like chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, pneumonia, and tuberculosis. 3. Central nervous system conditions like strokes, seizures, trauma, and meningitis, and additionally, other central nervous system stimuli like pain and nausea may stimulate ADH and cause SIADH. And lastly, a number of medications including selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, anti-epileptic drugs such as carbamazepine, and chemotherapy agents like cyclophosphamide, among others, may cause SIADH. Moving back to euvolemic hyponatremia, there are a few other causes too, in addition to SIADH. These may occur when the kidney is unable to excrete a sufficient quantity of urine relative to the patient's free water intake, causing the patient to be in a positive water balance. This may occur with psychogenic or primary polydipsia, in which case the patient drinks so much water that it exceeds the excretion capacity of the normal kidney. It may also happen in cases of acute or chronic kidney diseases with oliguria, in which case the kidney is unable to excrete a meaningful amount of urine relative to what would otherwise be considered a pretty normal amount of water intake. Let's stop here to review what we've just gone over. What is the most common cause of euvolemic hyponatremia? Yep, that's right, it's SIADH. And can you name 2 of the conditions that may be associated with SIADH? The answers may include small cell lung cancer, which can involve ectopic production of ADH, pulmonary diseases, CNS conditions, and certain medications, among other causes. Part 6. How is hyponatremia typically managed? The management of hyponatremia depends on the subtype of hyponatremia as well as the underlying etiology. For example, hypovolemic hyponatremia is managed with volume, most typically with an isotonic fluid such as normal saline, so it preferentially fills the extracellular fluid volume. On the other hand, hypervolemic hyponatremia is ideally managed with supportive measures prescribed to assist in excretion or prevent retention of additional extracellular fluid. This can be achieved with medications such as diuretics and angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors, and may be assisted by nutritional management with a low-sodium diet, for example. Additionally, it's key to address and treat the underlying cause directly whenever possible, such as with heart failure, cirrhosis, or nephrotic syndrome. The treatment of euvolemic hyponatremia should also target the underlying cause whenever possible. Additionally, supportive fluid management involves restricting the patient's water intake to a level at or below which the patient is able to excrete free water, whether it's from SIADH or a renal condition. Sometimes this management is not possible, for example, in a patient receiving life-saving chemotherapy. The chemotherapy may be the cause of the SIADH and yet also require fluid intake to prevent other side effects or complications. These patients may be treated with furosemide, a diuretic of the loop of Henle. Furosemide blocks the loop of Henle's ability to create a concentrated urine, and therefore it allows for a more dilute urine to be excreted even in the presence of ADH. In this context, furosemide is typically administered together with isotonic saline to address sodium losses and to potentiate its diuretic effects in excreting more water. Lastly, newer agents such as vasopressin receptor antagonists may be considered in certain cases of SIDH. However, their use remains limited by side effects and cost. Importantly, when hyponatremia presents with critical neurological symptoms, it must be treated emergently. Such patients will typically be managed with hypertonic or 3% saline administered acutely to raise the serum sodium to a threshold above which the neurologic symptoms stabilize and from which point the management can then be slowed and targeted for the underlying subtype and etiology of hyponatremia. On the other hand, for situations in which the hyponatremia developed over a few days or longer, it is essential to avoid correcting the serum sodium too rapidly. In these chronic states, the brain has made some adjustments to intracellular osmolality so that it tolerates the serum osmolality better. Correcting rapidly in this situation may correct the serum osmolality before these adjustments can be undone. This could result in water rapidly shifting back from the intracellular volume to the extracellular fluid volume and lead to a condition called osmotic demyelination syndrome. This devastating syndrome may present clinically as a locked-in syndrome with paralysis of motor pathways yet with preservation of cognitive function. To avoid this, therefore, it is essential to correct the sodium concentration slowly and ideally by no more than around 0.5 milliequivalents per liter per hour or 10 to 12 milliequivalents per liter in a 24-hour period for those patients who had a chronic or slow onset of their hyponatremia or in those patients for which the rapidity of onset is unable to be determined. A helpful mnemonic device to recall the syndromes associated with rapid changes in serum sodium is the following. From low to high, your pons will die, osmotic demyelination syndrome. From high to low, your brain will blow, cerebral edema and herniation. And that's all for hyponatremia. Let's see if we've completed our goals for the episode. First, can you describe the pathophysiology and causes of hypovolemic hyponatremia? Okay, so hypovolemic hyponatremia is due to conditions that are associated with volume loss, such as gastrointestinal illness. This is associated with physiologic secretion of ADH due to low effective circulating volume. ADH stimulates the kidneys to retain free water, increasing the amount of free water in the body relative to sodium, resulting in hyponatremia. Can you describe the pathophysiology and causes of hypervolemic hyponatremia? Hypervolemic hyponatremia is due to conditions in which the extracellular fluid volume is increased, yet there is a decreased effective circulating volume, like congestive heart failure. This is also associated with physiologic secretion of ADH, again, due to low effective circulating volume. ADH stimulates the kidneys to retain free water, resulting in hyponatremia. Can you describe the pathophysiology and causes of euvolemic hyponatremia? Euvolemic hyponatremia may be due to a non-physiologic secretion of ADH, or SIDH. Once again, ADH increases the amount of free water in the body relative to sodium, resulting in hyponatremia. Euvolemic hyponatremia may also occur independently of ADH when the fluid intake of the patient exceeds the limits of the kidney to excrete fluids, such as with primary polydipsia or kidney diseases with oligoanuria. Next, can you explain the mechanism by which hyperglycemia, hyperproteinemia, and hyperlipidemia may cause hyponatremia? In hyperglycemia, as might occur in patients with type 1 diabetes mellitus, the elevated serum glucose results in an increased serum osmolality. This results in water shifting from the intracellular volume to the extracellular fluid volume, leading to dilution of the serum sodium. In hyperproteinemia and hyperlipidemia, the concentration of sodium is technically normal, and a low serum sodium concentration in this context is termed pseudohyponatremia. The measurement detects sodium in a volume that includes excess amounts of lipids or proteins. Therefore, the test interprets that the sodium is present in a larger volume quantity, making it seem like the serum sodium concentration is dilute, even though the concentration of sodium per plasma water is actually normal. Next, can you describe the use of urine testing to differentiate between the types of hyponatremia? The urine sodium level can be helpful to distinguish euvolemic hyponatremia from hypovolemic and hypervolemic hyponatremia. In euvolemic hyponatremia, the effective circulating volume is normal, so the kidney will not be retaining sodium, leading to a high amount of urine sodium. Whereas with hypo and hypervolemic hyponatremia, the effective circulating volume is decreased, so the kidney will retain sodium, leading to a low level of sodium in the urine. The urine osmolality can be used to differentiate between causes of euvolemic hyponatremia. For example, SIDH will be associated with a relative increase in urine osmolality, whereas etiologies related to patients exceeding the limits of the kidney to excrete fluids, like with primary polydipsia, the urine osmolality will be low. Can you describe the management of the different types of hyponatremia? Hypovolemic hyponatremia should be treated with volume repletion, ideally normal saline. Hypervolemic hyponatremia can be supported with sodium restriction and medications that assist with extracellular fluid excretion, such as diuretics. Patients with euvolemic hyponatremia typically receive a fluid restriction to a level at or below which the patient is able to excrete free water, whether it's from SIDH or a renal condition. Can you describe the management of symptomatic hyponatremia? Symptomatic hyponatremia is an emergency and should be immediately managed with hypertonic or 3% saline to raise the serum sodium to a level where the neurologic symptoms stabilize, and then a slower management plan can be implemented safely, tailored to the underlying etiology. And lastly, can you describe the management of chronic hyponatremia and when to moderate the rate and degree of sodium correction? In patients who develop hyponatremia over days or longer, it is essential to achieve a slow rate of correction, not exceeding 10 to 12 milliequivalents per liter per day, to prevent osmotic demyelination syndrome. Well done! Armed with your newfound knowledge of hyponatremia, let's revisit our patient's story from the start of the episode. Thinking back to Miss Paul, an 84-year-old admitted with 2-day history of diarrhea, lightheadedness upon standing, and serum sodium level of 128 milliequivalents per liter, why is her serum sodium concentration low? And what would be your next management step? Based on the vignette with her history of diarrhea and findings suggestive of orthostatic hypotension, you suspect Ms. Paul is experiencing hypovolemic hyponatremia. Her total body water and sodium dropped due to GI losses. The decrease in effective circulating volume stimulated ADH release, resulting in increased free water retention relative to sodium retention, lowering her serum sodium concentration via dilution. Since Ms. Paul's beginning to develop concerning symptoms, and since she is not able to eat or drink very much at the moment, you order IV isotonic normal saline to correct her serum sodium and address her underlying etiology. Once her effective circulating volume is repleted, the stimuli for ADH will go away, and she'll be able to be discharged back to her assisted living home in a safe and timely fashion. And that's all I have for hyponatremia. Thanks for joining me. If you like this episode, give it a thumbs up or a comment. You can enjoy the full brick experience online at www.usmlerx.com, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. Safe fluid intake.